Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's episode of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode 60, presented by Last Word on Sports. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a great week and enjoyed the much more tame transition from week 3 to week 4. If you remember, week 2 to week 3, chaotic. We got Hall of Famers getting benched. We got guys that were on Hall of Fame trajectories suing the league and getting released and watching their careers go up in flames, just like every bridge that they ever made in their career. We'll get into that a little bit. But a lot more tame this week. Focus on the football. That's what we do here. It's a football show. That being said, let's kick off this episode with this week's Standout 7. And number one in Standout 7, as usual, I've been trying to cut this up a little bit, try and get two or three in here. What's the bigger story? All right, so the first part of this, what's the bigger story? Detroit's early start or Indianapolis? Now, I feel like I'm obligated to say it's Indy, because when you have a quarterback who's, you know, drafted and supposed to be a Hall of Fame QB from you know, his inception of his career, he's the prototype, he's hyped up, and, you know, injuries derail his career, he never really, you know, doesn't win the big game for you, and then he just up and retires during the preseason, the tail end of it, and you go out there, and, you know, they're 2-1, and they're Adam Vinatieri away from being 3-0. They've got to be the story for me, and, you know, this Colts team is pretty darn good. The interesting part is, how is that back end of the defense going to play with Malik Hooker being hurt? That's going to be a problem. Malik Hooker going to miss some significant time here for the Colts. Take a look at Jacoby Brissett stacked, back on the offensive side of the ball, rather. Jacoby Brissett threw three games, 72% completion rating, rounding up, 71.7. 646 yards, not going to blow you away. 7 touchdowns. Here's the big number, 1 pick. Just one pick. He's been sacked 6 times through 3 games, which if you watched Andrew Luck's career is nothing new. It's probably an upgrade. Marlon Mack averaging almost 5 yards a carry, 300 yards through 3 games. You can't get much better than that. Jordan Wilkins averaging 10 yards a carry. You know, just pretty darn good. T.Y. Hilton far and away leading the team in receptions at 20 of Brissett's 66 completions, 200 yards, 4 touchdowns. Not too much out of Eric Ebron early in the season, just 7 catches for 80 yards. Jack Doyle as well, 7 catches for 87. The tight ends are going to play a big role in this offense, I believe, going forward as Brissett gets more comfortable, along with maybe Nyheim Hines here and there out of the backfield. Obviously, they're missing Devin Funchess, who is done for the year, or the bulk of the year at least, with that collarbone injury. So they're going to lean on him. They're going to lean on Ebron, rather, along with maybe a guy, you know, in Zach Pascal, who's shown, you know, he's a decent wideout. I don't know if he could be a number 2, but he could definitely pitch in. I like this team. I said before the year, I picked them with Luck to win the division. It was hard for me to stick with them. I couldn't. You know, I went with Houston, and then I'm iffy on it. You know, I'm always back and forth on these things. When I have to change a pick because of injuries, it irks me. You know what I mean? It really irks me. I had the Colts falling all the way out of the playoffs because of this, because I didn't know how they'd handle not having Luck. I thought they'd still be a darn good team, but I thought not having Luck would put them on the outside looking in. It looks like right now they're in prime position. But Detroit has also had a good start. I'd say obviously the Colts are the bigger story. But with that being said, the Lions took down the Chargers at home because the Chargers were too stubborn or didn't have the room or the foresight to sign a kicker. They tried to have their punter do double duty, cost them a game on the road, and that's big because the Chargers sitting at 1-2 right now. We'll talk about that in a sec. And the Lions were up big against Arizona in week 1. They could be sitting at 3-0 heading into a big matchup with Kansas City. Unfortunately, they took their foot off the gas. They wind up with a tie in Arizona, which is going to make a funky playoff push. They're sitting at a whopping 2-0-1, which means technically they're having a better start than the Colts by percentage points here. They have 2.5 wins and just half a loss. But I was really impressed by the Colts' victory against the Falcons, albeit at home, but still. That's a team that could put up points, and for them to, you know, beat them down, holding the 24. 24 is not bad when you're playing Atlanta. Matt Ryan, obviously, completion percentage way too high in that game, 29 for 34. You got to try and force some more breakups there, but he threw a pick. Brissett, 310 on the offensive side. Marlon Mack chipped in 74. There's not much more you could ask for. Like I said, probably some better pass coverage, obviously. 29 to 34, not what you like to see. But Brissett himself, 28 to 37. So it was a passing attack all around. And we saw, you know, first half, they're up 20-3. They kind of take their foot off the gas a smidge. Atlanta steps up, a la 28-3. They know a lot about taking your foot off the gas. And then 14 points in the fourth for Atlanta. Just, you know, trying to make it look close, trying to make it a close game, trying to make a comeback. But I'd have to say the bigger story is Indianapolis. The next one is a bit of a fluky question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So who had a bigger first game? Kyle Allen against the Cardinals, playing against a bad team, or Daniel Jones against the Bucks, also playing against a bad team? This one's hard for me, because as much as I want to say, I don't know, it's interesting, because the Cardinals' defense is bad, and I'd say it's worse than the Bucks. I thought the Bucks would have a good defense, but they gave up 30, and they did it to a team that largely didn't run the ball the whole game. Their leading rusher was Daniel Jones, and he had two rushing touchdowns. Jones played not out of his mind, but he played a pretty darn good game, obviously mixed in the turnover. We're going to be doing this all year, obviously, some people. You know, I'm not turning the page yet. This is a game that you wonder, could Eli Manning have won this game without his star running back? I don't know. But I'll say this. Looking at the way the team plays around, maybe it was time for a change. I guess Eli didn't get the guys motivated. We saw Sterling Shepard turn in a big game. Not that he didn't have any with Manning. But, you know, we saw a little bit of a rapport with Darius Slayton. Probably, you know, some of the two reps together, playing with the twos. Russell Shepard, done for the year. He had one catch in this game. Saquon goes down. That's a big one. Sprained ankle. Saquon's going to be out 4-8. They're not going to IR him. I'm assuming because, you know, they're hoping it's closer to the 4 than the 8. But, I mean, why not be cautious here? Maybe they think they can make a run. Maybe Shermer was given the mandate, hey, you got to at least be competitive and push for a playoff spot or you're gone. I don't know what it is. I doubt it. I mean, it's 2 years. They'd probably let Shermer stay a third. I mean, they kiboshed McAdoo pretty quick, but that had to do with the whole Eli Manning debacle. And it seems like more people are warm on this one, even though they hated the Daniel Jones pick early on. And look, I'm one of them. I didn't hate him. I didn't hate the pick. I didn't hate the kid. You know, you want to pick Daniel Jones, go for it. But to pick him at 6 when no one was going to pick him in likelihood till the late 20s at best, that's preposterous. I mean, you can get more value. That's just, maybe I'm being a little gluttonous trying to get some value. But when you're a rebuilding team, you need it. And by the way, the Giants should have lost this game. I'm just putting it out there. We saw Tampa Bay's kicker miss a field goal and two extra points in a one-point game. This is really a win that was a loss, right? Which is, realistically, if you're a Giants fan that's, trying to be that guy, you're rooting for them to play well and lose so they can have a good pick next year, right? That's probably the most proactive thing. Let's talk about Kyle Allen, though. Against an awful defense, mind you. They're down 7-0 after one. They proceed to go on a 38-13 run. Kyle Allen, 19 for 26, 4 touchdowns, 261. Christian McCaffrey goes off, as to be expected. Christian McCaffrey, 24 carries, a buck 50 against this bad Cardinal defense. Greg Olsen with 2 touchdowns in this game. And you start to think, and you know, with all the injuries Cam's dealing with, and he's not going to play this week, maybe this guy could be the future. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's a little soon to make this guess after one game, but when do you give this guy a fair shake? I don't know. Just food for thought. Not like Cam's 35 years old, not like Cam's completely washed, but just an interesting thought. The kid played pretty darn well. I mean, we've seen backups play well and then be awful. I mean, we've seen Matt Flynn do it against the Patriots, no less. But he looked pretty good. Obviously, he's got great players around him, but if we're going to praise Daniel Jones for lighting up the Bucks on, I don't know. You got to heap some praise onto Kyle Allen as well, especially when that Carolina team did not look good previously. They didn't. I mean, you know, a bad team is just what the doctor ordered, but when you have a backup quarterback in, that bad team can shake you. Another thing I'd like to point out with the Giants, after Saquon goes down, they completely go away from the run. We see, I mean, obviously Saquon, 8 carries for 10, not great anyway. Wayne Gallman, 5 carries for 13. Got the ball 5 times. Yeah, I know Wayne Gallman isn't a dynamic back, but Wayne Gallman is a capable NFL running back, and this is one of the problems that I've seen, and they did it in the first 2 weeks as well with Manning under center. They go away from the run so comfortably. I mean, Daniel Jones dropping back 36-plus times in his opening game, in my opinion, that's not what you want. Because when you consider he was sacked 5 times, he dropped back 41 times in his opener. And he ran the ball 4 times. I believe only one of which was designed, so that's 44 dropbacks out of how many snaps? I mean, come on, guys. Look, I know Saquon goes down. I know they're pretty stout inside, but this Giants O-line, for per Pro Football Focus, which, you know, we like to heap praise on them. They do the deep analysis for us. Top 5 running offensive line. And you're just going to go, all right, well, it worked out. Technically, they got the win, although they snatched... Tampa Bay snatched defeat from the jaws of victory in this one, and that's my 2 cents. Final point on the bigger story, and this one is an interesting one. What's the bigger story here? Cleveland dropping to 1-2, or the Chargers dropping to 1-2? Now, if you're talking division-wise, the Chargers are in a division with the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Chiefs. Sitting at 1-2 could very well mean you've lost the division for the Chargers. The Browns in a division with Pittsburgh, who's floundering. I like Mason Rudolph a little bit. I think he's shown some flashes, but let's not, you know, beat around the bush here. I don't see them as a playoff team, minus Big Ben, really. They could be decent, but it's not for me. And Cincinnati, who comes and goes? They're Cincinnati. They like to make it close. It's eyewash, some of these games. So realistically, Cleveland's got to compete with Baltimore, and Baltimore looks like they're off to quite the hot start. So I think the bigger story's got to be Cleveland. And here's why. I think they're outclassed playing the Rams. That's my opinion. I think the Rams are a team that wouldn't shock me if they went back to the Super Bowl. But when you get blown out by the Titans, your only win is against the hapless Jets, who had to go to a third-string quarterback in primetime, by the way. Can we get some good Monday night games? We'll talk about this later, but Browns-Jets No. Look, I know injuries messed up that one, but come on, guys. You're betting on a lot to think that people would tune into Browns-Jets. You really are. Anyway, Baker goes out against the Rams and goes 18 for 36 with 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Nick Chubb, 23 for 96, no qualms with him. Hey, Odell got his 6 catches, so he's not unhappy. You know, he doesn't particularly seem to be one that cares about the wins and losses to me. But it's an interesting one. They forced 2 picks out of Jared Goff, and they just couldn't win this one. You know, and you look at it, and they're up going into the fourth. They're up, and they're at home, and they just can't hold it. And it's really a team that doesn't have. It's weird. I would say it wouldn't shock. I said before it wouldn't shock me if they went back to the Super Bowl, but as is, what is this team's identity? Last year they were, you know, a Todd Gurley on the ground, and then it opens up the play action, then they could air you out. Okay. Todd Gurley gets 14 carries for 43. He's kind of shut down in this one. Todd Gurley hasn't really been too much of a factor through the first 3 games. You know, Malcolm Brown gets 3 carries. They drop back and throw the ball 38 times. And we see a big game out of Brandon Cooks. Cooper Kupp shows up. Robert Woods a little bit less on the production. But we see they have 4 guys listed with receptions here. Robert Woods, 3 for 40. Gerald Everett, 2 for 15. And Cooper Kupp and Cooks combined for 19 catches, 2 touchdowns, and 213 yards. I mean, they have a great passing attack. They do. Goff at the helm is iffy at times, but he's a pretty good quarterback. They're kind of shifting their identity on the fly, and it really leads me to wonder how healthy is Todd Gurley and how healthy is the rest of his career. There were reports in the offseason that he had, you know, degenerative knees, a la Andrew Bynum, maybe some arthritis in them, which is not what you want to hear from your running back, especially when you just gave him a big deal, and that's why teams don't give big deals to running backs. And, oh, geez. Anyway, the point is, I need to see more out of Cleveland. I really do, and for the amount of smack I've heard Baker talk, you know, and they're going to Baltimore, so you want to shut people up, go win in Baltimore. You know, we've seen Baker had beef this week with Rex Ryan. Rex called him overrated, and, you know, I wouldn't say... this season he has underperformed. I wouldn't say he's overrated. People saying he's a top 5 quarterback, that's probably not true, but is he one of the better quarterbacks in the league? Is he top 50? Yeah. Top 50%? Yeah. Is he top 10? I'd have to crunch the numbers. Right now, no, of course. But coming into the season, you can make a case. I probably wouldn't, but you could. it's interesting. And then you see him going at, you know, he's talking, and somebody comments and says, hey, man, focus on winning a game. You're turning into Antonio Brown. He's like, yeah, you're right. I should go freeze my feet off and get cut and blah, blah, blah. And look, I respect him not taking junk from Rex. You know, stand up for yourself. All good. But to completely throw AB under the bus is hilarious because AB is the king of Twitter beefs right now. And by the king, I mean he's got nothing else to do, so that's all he does, right? That's all he does. So, is he the king as in he wins them? Probably not. I would say he didn't win the one against Eric Weddle, and we're getting completely off topic. But, you know, we talk about Eric Weddle and AB having a Twitter beef, which is one of the more interesting things in the world. So AB goes, let's see, let's read it from the beginning, from its inception. The game need me, I'm like test answers. Golden Tate retweets it and says, what? Eric Weddle goes, they def don't. Weddle, I F with you, bro, but you can't guard AB. Don't need to. Isn't on a team. Like, come on. You need some attention, little man? I'll put that stiff arm in your neck in Pittsburgh. You deserved it, little Weedle. Ha ha ha. When are you going to learn that it isn't about you? Never was, never will be. Got a game to get ready for. Good luck, my guy. Like, completely trolling the dude. Bro, I don't even know you. Don't call me AB. That's my NFL name, dummy. Bro, he called you AB because it's your Twitter name and you're on Twitter. You're not making any sense. Glad you're not on my team. Call yourself whatever you want. Doesn't matter one bit to me. Good luck at CMU, my bro. Matt Miller, the NFL Network scout, replies, the name on his Twitter bio is literally AB. I don't know what this is. Keep your luck, duck. Listen to your team. Stay focused on your opponent, not AB. AB is the brand, not the individual. Clearly an AB fan. Even I know about education. Oh, really? What? And then I don't even know. The dude's a clown. He's going full clown. And then he's talking about how Baker should have never been drafted before Lamar Jackson. That's not true. That's not true. Lamar Jackson definitely did not deserve to be drafted above Baker Mayfield. You can talk how you will about how they're both playing. You know, before Kansas City, Lamar Jackson was racking up stats against nobodies, you know, out against Arizona and Miami. And, you know, not saying the Titans are good. Baker's playing poorly, but three games doesn't change anything. And Baker played just as well as Lamar last year. He just didn't have as good a team around him. We've gone completely off the beaten path here. We're going to move on now. Sorry about that one. Anyway, number two in the standout seven. An intriguing week for Philadelphia. So Philly loses close at home late after a blocked field goal. It looks like all they got to do is get down there and... Wentz, you know, 19 for 36, not great. They didn't get the best production on the ground, but they kind of went away from it. Miles Sanders, obviously, 13 for 53 is not bad. He was also their leading receiver. This is a game they were playing without Alshon Jeffrey. I'll give him a little bit of a break losing that one at home with a beat-up receiving core. Albeit a game they probably should have won. You block a field goal late and you're driving down the field. That's a game you got to win. Then they go on the road and shock me, and they beat the Packers. I mean, Wentz throws for a 160. Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders dominate this game offensively for them. Alshon Jeffrey comes back and plays in this one, and we see the late interception by Nigel Bradham on a tip. And, I mean, Rodgers throws the ball 53 times in this one for 422. He's their leading rusher. The Philly defense really, I mean, they were getting aired out, but when it counted, they made the play. Did they, though? I'll put this out there. I say they made the play, but did they, though? I mean, it was a tip off the receiver's hands. I used to have this conversation when I was younger with my father, my dad. And it's like, obviously, being an Eli Manning fan, I've seen plenty of tip picks. That was kind of the Eli Manning Giants specialty, off the receiver's hands, Dominic Hickson, you know, the whole gang just kind of bopping the ball up in the air for interceptions. And should it be a separate stat or something? I don't know. They caught the ball. That's all that matters. We saw the ghost of Jimmy Graham make an appearance in this one, and supposedly Rodgers told the broadcast crew he wanted to get him involved more. I mean, yeah, you should. He's a weapon. At least he was when he was in New Orleans. He really wasn't in Seattle, and he really hasn't been too much for them either. But taking down the Packers on the road, no small showing. Good job. Good ups. Big ups to Philly and Coach Peterson going out there on the road and winning that game. Because this is one that could have easily, you know, started a little bit of a downward trend, if you will. You know what I mean? And obviously we saw Devontae Adams go down in this one with a toe injury late. He's not going to be out for so long, supposedly. They got a long week before their next game anyway, but that probably impacted that goal line stand as well. Either way, big ups to them. They came out and played on short rest on the road. That's a huge game for them. Big win. The O, the D, look pretty good. Even giving up 27, you're facing Aaron Rodgers, you're going to give up some points. Number three in the standout seven, we got two teams that, you know, we've got the Skip Bayless part of our thing here. The Pats and the Cowboys keep rolling. And Dallas, I mean, they're taking on New Orleans this week in what could be a playoff preview. That could be a huge game. And what I really want to talk about here is the Patriots and how long this undefeated streak could go, right? So Dallas, they're in New Orleans. They could lose this week, realistically. New Orleans won on the road against Seattle. We'll talk about that later. Big game. Teddy Bridgewater's a capable quarterback. They're playing in the Superdome. Anything can happen. I mean, a lot of talent around there. Latavius Murray filling in for Ingram this year, but you still got Kamara. You still got Michael Thomas. Ted Ginn taking the top off the defense. Taysom Hill flying around everywhere. Who knows? The Patriots, on the other hand, head to Buffalo. And Buffalo's 3-0. Bet you guys knew that. Yeah, they've talked a lot about it. They beat the Giants. They beat the Jets. And then last week, they beat the Bengals. Wow, real rough start to Buffalo's schedule. If we take a look at Buffalo's schedule, they got the Pats this week. Then they have the Titans and the Dolphins. They could be sitting at 5-1, 6-0 if they could steal one. Then they've got, you know, Philly, Washington, they could win that one. The Browns, Dolphins, they could win that one. Denver, they could win that one. You know, you start thinking, all right, this team could sneak their way in here. So let's say they stay hot. What are we looking at here? That's three wins. If they beat Tennessee, it's four. They beat the Dolphins, it's five. Washington is six. The Dolphins, again, is seven. The Broncos is eight. You know, the Jets is nine. Could this team be a sneaky playoff team? It could. I don't know. That's not what we're here for, though. We're here to look at the Patriots. Patriots are going to win tomorrow, and they're going to go to 4-0. I mean, it's not 100% lock, but I'd certainly bet on it. If they win tomorrow, they go to 4-0. Let's play that game. They're going to beat Washington. That's not an if. Barring a Tom Brady injury, they're going to beat Washington. 5-0. They're going to beat the Giants on Thursday night at home. 6-0. The Jets again. They usually don't lose to the Jets. Let's go to 7-0. Then they play Cleveland. This is the beginning of the tough stretch, in theory. They play Cleveland. Let's say they go to 8-0. They play Baltimore in Baltimore. That's a good game. Then they play Philly in Philly after a bye. Then they play Dallas. Then they play Houston in Houston. Then they play Kansas City, of course, in New England. Why would they have to go to Kansas City? No. Then they play Cincinnati. Then they play the Bills. Then they play the Dolphins. Feels like a softball schedule, a cupcake to walk down there, because you're looking at the fact that if they beat the Bills, they could walk into their game against the Ravens at what? Let's see. 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-0. They could walk into the game with the Browns 7-0 and playing at home. They can walk into the game with Dallas at 10-0. The Chiefs at 11? 12? Sorry, 12? I don't know, man. You start to wonder, maybe, what if this AB thing would have worked for them? If AB would have just been the good soldier and stayed there. If it weren't for the accusations, does this team go 16-0? I don't know. I mean, they could still, I guess. I wouldn't bet on it, but anything's possible. This team's going to be undefeated for quite a while, and they're probably on their way to at least a two seed. Let's see how Kansas City does. Speaking of Kansas City, number four in the standout seven. Kansas City, pretty much for my money, dominating Baltimore. I mean, this game was not nearly as close as the scoreboard would indicate. Once again, we saw the week before Baltimore and the Cardinals, and they made it seem like, you know, the coverage after the game, it's like, oh, you know, the Cardinals played them close. No, they didn't. They really didn't. Baltimore got out to an early lead and then loafed to a win. And, you know, Kansas City puts up 23 in the second quarter. Baltimore scores early. They go for two. And let's talk about this for a second as a side point. Coach Harbaugh is coaching this team and managing this season day in, day out, in game, like this is his last season or he's on the hot seat, like he didn't get a contract extension. Is he being Riverboat Ron? Look, and there's some statistics and data that would say if you go for two all the time, more often than not, you gain a point, right? You're getting at a 60% clip. You're gaining more than you're losing, right? So then you mix that into the fact they're going for fourth downs all the time. Look, they're playing like this team doesn't have the best kicker in football. Justin Tucker is the best kicker in football. Hands down. So to essentially neutralize your own kicker is kind of interesting to me. You know, it's intriguing. They didn't get the two-point conversions as often. You know, they didn't get more than they did get in this one. And that's interesting because, you know, it goes against the data and all that. And the weird part of it is we can look at anything in a vacuum and say, all right, well, people converted a 60% clip, so okay. But if more people start going for it, they're going to practice the defense for it more. And you'd also start to see, it wouldn't be a surprise when someone goes for two in the first quarter if everyone's just going for two all the time. The surprise element of it and catching the coordinator off guard and some of the players off guard is kind of part of it. Obviously, they're not no huddling to a two-point conversion. But you know what I mean. So it's possible that the data is not, you know, accurate. It wouldn't be accurate to say that that's a one-to-one, you know? To assume that you could project that onto a larger sample size is an oversight, in my opinion. And, alright, that's all I'll say on that. We saw Patrick Mahomes do Patrick Mahomes things. 27-37, 374, three touchdowns. Darrell Williams, look, you could plug in any Williams at this point in the backfield if his name starts with a D, and he could give you 50 yards rushing for the Chiefs. I mean, 9 carries for 62. LeSean McCoy looked like Shady again, 8 carries for 54 and a touch. Mecole Hardman with the early deep ball. Travis Kelce pitching in. Sammy Watkins pitching in. I mean, we see this kid Williams with a combined, 14 touches for a .09? That's pretty good for a guy that, you know, not many people thought would produce. Yours truly included. This was Kansas City's most vulnerable. The Ravens came in hot. Hot, hot, hot. The Chiefs are still without Tyreek Hill. They're without Eric Fisher on their O-line. They're without their starting running back. And they still drop 23 in a quarter. They're up two scores. They enter they're not up two. They're up three scores. They enter the fourth quarter up 30-13. Oh, but look, it's, you know, they got outscored 15-3 in the fourth. Lamar Jackson goes 22 of 43, and this was a bad one for him. Just above 50% completion rating, but that doesn't tell the whole story. He's missing open throws. This was a poor performance for Lamar Jackson. Mark Ingram had a big game. Great. I mean, we know Mark Ingram is productive, and he's more than capable. But Lamar Jackson, this was a test, and he, in my opinion, he failed it. He played a poor game. He did. And, you know, Kansas City's no slouch, but their defense is not the strong point of this team. To score 6 points in the first half and to be walking into the fourth having only 13, you know, that's not going to fly. You're not going to win having 13 points in the first three quarters against Kansas City, unless you're the Patriots or unless somebody gets hurt or you go on a crazy fourth quarter run. And you see, they had 15 in the fourth, and they still just made it a one-score game. Poor showing from the Ravens. Don't look at the scoreboard all the time. Watch the game. Poor showing. This was them at their most vulnerable. If the Ravens were going to take down the Chiefs, it was going to be this game. The only thing that could have been better for them is if the game was in Baltimore. They lose this one. Big one. Number 5 in the standout 7 for me this week, the Saints on the road taking down Seattle. Now, I'll say this. Speaking of a team turning it on in the fourth, Seattle always does this. You cannot beat Seattle. You can't walk away after three quarters and think you've beaten Seattle, especially not in Seattle. I mean, they're down 27-7, and this game ends 33-27. And look, I'm not going to be two-sided with this one and say that this was the best game Seattle's ever played, but there's different circumstances in this one, and here's why. We see a return touchdown be the difference. It's defense and special teams. We see Deontay Harris's punt return touchdown was the difference in this game. Realistically, we see Alvin Kamara, 9 catches out of the backfield, 16 carries. He had a good game. Michael Thomas, only 5 catches, which is rare for him. Taysom Hill, not really too big of a factor. Teddy Bridgewater, 19-27, .177. Not really putting the ball down the field. 2 touchdowns, you know. It is what it is. Seattle playing good defense at home. Russell Wilson ends this one with 400 passing yards. And we see the big thing was the Saints return touchdown and they forced a fumble and got the ball. If it wasn't for that turnover and that punt, Seattle wins this game. Obviously, you can't take those things away. But a huge game from Tyler Lockett, kind of exploding, hasn't really been too big of a factor, I would say, the first 2 weeks. He's kind of been flashes here and there, and you see 11 catches. He's their number one wideout, in theory at least. You know, DK Metcalf, a big catch, but it didn't really play too much of a role. Will Disley seems to be emerging as a legitimate tight end threat for them in their passing game. Good for him. A la Luke Wilson a few years ago. He kind of burst on the scene as well. And we see Seattle lose this one, and this is the first home game Seattle's lost in September in the Pete Carroll era. That's a shocking statistic to me. I know they're good at home, but golly. And the Saints steal this one. They really do. They stole this one on the road, and they needed it. They really did. Number six in the standout, seven's kind of an abbreviated one, and it's just Pittsburgh dropping the ball on the road, in my opinion. We see the Niners turn the ball over left and right in this game, and we see Pittsburgh up 6-3 at half. I know it's not a big lead, but and we see Mason Rudolph, not a great game. James Conner, not really too productive on the ground. I wouldn't say anyone had a great game in this one for Pittsburgh. I wouldn't say their defense played that bad. They forced turnovers. Minkah Fitzpatrick had a huge one. Forced fumble and a pick. Great game for him. TJ Watt with a pick. I think it was a tip pick, if I remember correctly. On the other end, what did I say at the beginning of the year, guys? If you've been watching, you know I predicted it. I didn't predict Raheem Mostert being the lead back, seemingly, for this team. I predicted McKinnon having a... Well, not McKinnon, excuse me. Tevin Coleman having that, you know, kind of role. But Raheem Mostert and Matt Breida combined for 26 carries and 147 yards on the ground. Talk about taking over the game. Saw a little bit more Kittle in this one. Saw some Kyle Juszczyk making diving catches. Deebo Samuel with three catches. You know, this was a big win, I would say, for San Fran. They're not playing a team that's better than them. But when you're not playing a team that's better than you, it can be a little bit of a trap, especially when you have Cleveland coming, you know, after your bye. You're just trying to get into the bye, and then you got a big game after your bye, and then after that they have LA, and you're like, all right, we can win this one. We're at home. You know, you're down early. You're turning the ball over left and right. They hang on to win it. Jimmy G, not great. 23 of 32, 277, two picks. Not a great game. Haven't been super impressed with Jimmy G. Not in this one, at least. And the weeks earlier, I don't think he did anything crazy to really, you know, take my breath away or, you know, shock me. I mean, they're playing Tampa and Cincinnati, so I wouldn't really care anyway. But I think that's interesting. Number seven in the standout seven. Can we get a good Monday night football game, please? So let's run through the Monday night matchups we've had here. Texans Saints was a great game. Broncos Raiders was decent. It was a decent game. All right, that's week one. We're good. Browns Jets was hopeful. It was a hopeful matchup. It didn't go well, obviously, because of the injuries. All right, I'll give you that one. That's a mulligan. Week three, we get Bears Redskins. No. No, 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 no. This is not a good football game. Did you schedule this one assuming that, I mean, Alex Smith isn't back. You had to assume that they'd be starting Haskins, and there's supposedly some infighting about Haskins in the front office / coaching ranks of Washington. So I don't care about that game. To be honest, I watched it. It was boring. It was a boring game. Shout out to Taylor Gabriel. I said he was a budget baller. He was a good acquisition from Atlanta way back. We've been running the show that long. And, you know, he balled out. Good for him. This week we got another division matchup. Bengals Steelers. No. I'm not intrigued. Even if Ben was there, this would be a shootout with no stakes. And, you know, Cincinnati is Cincinnati. No. 49ers Browns. Look, I know you guys are in love with the Browns. We have the Browns on Monday night twice, got them on Sunday night. 49ers are a good team. That'll be a good one, in theory. 49ers are a good team. All right, I'll give you that one. I'm tired of the Browns, man. Look, I'm a Browns guy. You know last year I was supporting the Browns big. I'm hoping that I'm tired of watching them lose. Gotta have some turnover. You know, I'm a baseball fan as well. Watching the Cubs turn around and be a champion, the Astros do it as well, is interesting. Watching the Royals come out of nowhere and be a title contender and a winner, that's interesting. Parity is interesting. Having a team consistently on the bottom is not. Lions-Packers. Okay, week six, we're getting into it. Week seven, who we got? Pats-Jets. No! Darnold will be back, maybe. It'll be interesting, hopefully. But no, Pats are going to win that game. Dolphins-Steelers. No. Cowboys-Giants. No. Seahawks-Niners. Okay. Week 10, you got me. Okay. Cool. Week 11, what do we got here? That's the one that is interrupted. Midweek, we got a lot of... There's a game missing here on our schedule. Excuse me. I'm a week ahead. Chiefs Chargers. Yes. Okay, I'm buying in. I'm buying in again. Week 12. Ravens Rams. You got me. All right, you're hooking me. Vikings Seahawks. We're good. Okay. So we're sandbagging all the good ones for the end of the year. Then we got Giants Eagles. No. Not intrigued. Colts Saints. That'll be a good one. Super Bowl rematch. That'd be interesting. Packers Vikings, and then finally, that is our final game. Excuse me. Final one is Packers Vikings. I would have been cool with, look, if they're going, I don't know what the theme is here. If we're doing classic matchups or something, probably not. But, you know, going with Bears-Redskins, that could be interesting. If you wanted to do a shtick where it's like, you know, it's all big matchups, big legendary matchups, and we got Vikings-Packers, okay, cool. And that's why you have Giants-Cowboys in there, because it's Giants-Cowboys. Okay, I guess. But going into this year, we knew the Giants weren't going to be contenders, and we knew the Redskins weren't going to be contenders, and most people didn't have the Jets as contenders. And I know you got to have the Raiders on there because of the late night one, but couldn't that have been like Chargers someone? Couldn't that have been a good game? No. Bengals Steelers. We knew the Bengals weren't going to be contenders. You know, Browns Niners. I didn't see anyone else but me have the Niners as a contender. Lions Packers. I had the Lions as a good team. I don't think many people did. You know, Pats Jets. Once again, Dolphins. No one had them. So we're looking at a bunch of these teams. Look, everybody deserves to get exposure. They do. But usually that comes via Thursday night. You know, we see week 9, we have Niners-Cardinals. That's your exposure for Kyler Murray. That's what sells that game. Redskins-Vikings, they probably put that there in week 8, hoping that that'd be Dwayne Haskins. Makes sense. Chiefs-Broncos, okay, you know, division matchup, I guess. All right. You know, Giants-Patriots, it's like, all right, this game isn't good enough to be a Sunday night or Monday night game. Probably should be a Sunday 1 o'clock kick. But, you know, in theory, it was going to be Eli Manning versus Tom Brady. Okay. You know, it's big season for the NFL. Legendary matchups. I get it. I don't know. I'm a little bored with some of them. I'm not high on the ones they're putting in primetime. Like, even if we look back, obviously, Bears-Redskins. I get it. I'm harping on this a little bit. Could Saints-Seahawks have not been that game? Like, is Saints-Seahawks not always a better game? Assuming Drew is healthy. We didn't know Drew would be hurt. Is Texans-Chargers not always a better game? I know that one's on the West Coast. It'd be a little tough. So put it in Houston. Houston's played in primetime before. You know, how is that? Falcons-Colts. We didn't know Andrew Luck was going to retire. That's a better game. Lions-Eagles. That's a better game. We're looking at Bears-Redskins and saying this is the matchup we want in primetime? Nothing against the Bears. The Bears are a pretty darn good squad defensively, and their offense is decent. It's decent. I'll give them that. Not top tier. Fans wouldn't say that. Case Keenum goes out and throws for 330 and 3 picks. This is what we want on Monday Night Football. Look, I got nothing against the Redskins, but No. That'll end Standout 7. Just a couple of news and notes before we get into it. Keanu Neal, done for the year with the Achilles injury he suffered, I believe, last week. He slams his helmet on the ground, gets a penalty for it when he's clearly writhing in pain. Probably should have picked up that flag, in my opinion. Malik Hooker, as I said, missing significant time for Indy. One last thing. I was right about the penalties. You know, I was looking at it. It didn't feel right. And, you know, we see the league called some officials in and said, hey, guys, you're calling too many holding penalties. And we saw them drop down last week, and it felt a little bit more bearable. Just saying. Keep your eyes out. If something feels off, it's probably off. And now we'll get into the best part of the show, everyone's favorite part of the show. I think so, at least. The pick'em portion of our show, and we'll start with a 1 o'clock kick featuring Danny Dimes playing his first career home game against the Washington Redskins after I bashed the Redskins relentlessly. It'd be funny if I picked him to win. I won't. I'm picking Danny Dimes at home. I'm not jumping on the bandwagon. I never said the kid was bad. Let me put that out there. He looked pretty good in the preseason. And from the highlights I saw at Duke, he looked pretty good. Just think they overdrafted him. Or drafted him too high, rather. Whichever term you prefer. That being said, I'm taking him at home. Without Saquon, this game could get iffy. Shermer might have him drop back 50 times. I think they can give the ball to Gallman and get production on the ground. I don't know why they refuse to give the ball to Wayne Gallman. I think he's a decent backup back, and he could probably be a decent change of pace for Saquon because he's a little bit more of a bowling ball than Saquon is, obviously. Saquon, more of the elusive, you know, juke spin kind of guy, although he can bowl you over too. Sterling Shepard's going to play, obviously. We're getting towards the point where Golden Tate's going to be back. Ingram coming off a big one. I said, it went Mike Tyson for a second there. I said that Evan Ingram would have a big year anyway, and with Danny Dimes in there, you know, tight end being the security blanket, probably going to keep having a good year. Excuse me, did I say game? Yeah, I said he was going to have a big year. Either way, give me the Giants at home to win their second game. First game, probably shouldn't have won it, like I said. But either way, a win is a win is a win. Next, 1 p.m. from Detroit, we got the Chiefs and the Lions, two of the more storied franchises in the league. And this one is going to be interesting for my money. I'm going to take the Chiefs. The Chiefs are the better team. But we saw how Detroit made the Chargers play slow and play their game. Detroit played a pretty darn good game against the Chargers. They shouldn't have won. You know, if the Chargers signed a kicker, they win that game. But they played them real close. I want to see if Detroit can keep up with Kansas City. Kansas City's defense, not their strong suit, although it did look pretty good last week against, you know, against the Ravens before it stopped mattering and they let them come back into it. Stopped mattering in theory, obviously. They lose that game. It's all bad. But, you know, to a certain extent, stopped mattering. I'm being honest with you. Give me the Chiefs on the road in a close one. Next, we have the Titans on the road against the Falcons. Let's make this a 60-second pick. I'm not taking the Titans. I know the Falcons have been inconsistent in the past, but I think the Falcons have to win this game, right? They don't lose this game. Falcons are the better team. They're coming off a rough one against the Colts. Give me Atlanta. Next, the divisional matchup, a game that might be the game of the week. And I say that a lot, but I mean it. A game that should probably be the Monday night game instead of Bengals-Steelers, but let's not keep going into that, you know, Pandora's box. Bengals-Steelers is Monday night. The Browns head to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. The Browns take on the team that was formerly the Browns. I think the Ravens win this one because they're at home. They just got popped in the mouth, and they came on late. I'm saying, you know, Kansas City's defense took their foot off the gas, but that could help one team build momentum into the next week. The Browns got to start winning some football games. I'm being honest with you. If they're chasing Baltimore, and they're going to be, it's not a must win, but winning this game would be very helpful to pull them into a tie, first of all, and second of all, it would start to push towards a tiebreaker. Because take a look at Cleveland's schedule. They got San Fran next week, and that's no cakewalk in Santa Clara. Then they have Seattle on a short week in Cleveland. Then, after a bye, they head to Foxborough. No cakewalks here for the Cleveland Browns. Not yet, at least. I mean, they get into a stretch where they play, you know, Denver, and then a couple weeks later they play the Dolphins and the Bengals twice and the Cardinals. But they're in a little bit of a tough spot, especially for a team that's not playing at its peak. They need to win this one. It's going to be close. Baker's got to show up after all the smack he's talking, and that makes me almost want to pick him. I think the Ravens win this one. Next, we have the Raiders heading to Indianapolis to take on the Jacoby Brissett-led Colts. I think this one will be kind of like the Raiders-Broncos game in Week 1, but I think the Raiders will be playing the role of Denver. I think Indy wins this one at home in a game that's closer than some would say maybe it should be, but it'll be weirdly entertaining. Tyrell Williams has shown, I mean, in Los Angeles, he was a fantastic number two, number three. I don't know if he could be a number one for the Raiders, but he's shown some spurts, and he's a pretty darn good wideout, and he's got some chemistry with Derek Carr. Let's see how he plays. I think Brissett wins this one, though, and they keep rolling. Let's see if the Colts can build a little bit of a lead in their division. Next, we have a battle of the Titans. Two 3-0 teams, both from the AFC West. You know what I'm talking about. It's Pat's Bills, and there's no way I pick the Bills, right? I don't think many people pick the Bills in this one. Maybe Rex Ryan will pick the Bills. I'm picking the Pats. That's just the way it is. The Pats are the better football team. The Pats are arguably the best team in football right now. I mean, you could say that you could pluck that sentence out of any year in the last 20 and probably be right. Yeah, I'm taking the Pats on the road. I like Josh Allen. I like what he brings at the quarterback position, his athleticism, big arm. You know, he's a competitor. He's willing to take that hit. They don't have the weapons on offense. And them winning games with a good defense and piecing together offense is not going to change my mind. Hopefully their young running back is out there and he contributes. He was hurt, missed last week, I believe. Either way, it's not going to happen. Pats on the road. Next, we have our second-to-last 1 o'clock kick. The Panthers head to Houston to take on the Texans, and Kyle Allen continues his reckoning road tour. I want to take Kyle Allen on the road, but they are just not the better football team. I don't think the Panthers' defense is as good as it once was, and they're kind of living on rep a little bit. Some of the older dudes are obviously gone. Luke Kuechly's still there being the anchor, and he makes plays left and right, but I think Houston's just the better football team here. And Houston's coming off a big win against the Chargers. Speaking of the Chargers, what's better to rehab and come off of a loss than to take a road trip to South Florida and take on the Miami Dolphins? South Beach, rather. Yeah, 62nd. No, the Chargers win. The Chargers win every single time. Does Philip Rivers get hurt? The Chargers probably still win with Geno Smith. It's important to note in this game, though, the Chargers will be without Mike Williams and Justin Jackson, but they might have Mel Gordon in this game. They just might. Mel Gordon reportedly might get some reps in this one, which will be interesting. Either way, they win. And just another note I forgot to mention before, Matt Stafford listed as questionable for the game against the Chiefs. Hobbled Matt Stafford. We've seen a hobbled Matt Stafford throw a game-winning touchdown, though. I assume he gets out there and gets a win. Excuse me. They don't win. I assume he gets out there and plays. And tries to get the win, is what I was trying to say. No doubt in my mind, if Stafford doesn't play, they lose this game. I'm 80-20, they lose anyway. Next, our first of two 405 kicks. The Bucks head to LA to take on the Rams. The Bucks coming off not a bad showing against the Giants, I would say. The defense kind of, you know, got leaky late in that one, but, you know, you make some kicks, you win that game. The Bucks are pretty good. The Rams looking for their identity, trying to be that air it out team now, maybe hoping for Malcolm Brown to step up and be more of a more than a feature back, you know, maybe more than 10 carries a game, because I haven't seen the big one from Gurley yet. Hoping Gurley will be Todd Gurley again. Reminds me of watching David Johnson, you know, last season when he was trying to come back from the ACL. I believe it was the ACL or Achilles. I think it was the ACL. And he just didn't look the same. I'm hoping Gurley will be the same. David Johnson showing a little bit more of himself nowadays. The Rams win this one, though. Easily. Maybe not easily. This one could be interesting. Could be a shootout if Jameis Winston gets hot, because he did score 30-plus last week. The other 4-5 kick is a division matchup. Seahawks at Cardinales. And, yeah, Seattle wins this one on the road. They do. They're coming off a loss. Probably not going to lose two in a row. Cardinals haven't looked great. No. Seahawks on the road. And then our first of two 4-25 kicks. Another divisional matchup. The Vikings head to Soldier Field to take on the Chicago Bears. This one's interesting, because I have a history of picking Kirk Cousins and then him underperforming and disappointing me, and then I bash him the next week. The Bears coming off a pretty good game against the Redskins on Monday night. The Vikings coming off a matchup with, let me refresh my memory, who did they play? They played the Raiders, that's right. They blew out the Raiders at home after a bad loss to the Packers on the road. So this team's kind of 50-50. I have a history of picking Kirk Cousins and him letting me down. Let's pick Kirk Cousins and get let down, eh? I'd say the smart money would probably be on the Bears, but I'm going to take the Vikings, because one of these days, for the amount of money that was given to him and for all the talent that we see when watching him here and there, Kirk Cousins has to step up eventually, right? Let's see if it's this week. He had that big game last year against the Packers where they went out and got the tie. That was huge. I thought that was the turning point. It wasn't. Our final 425 kick is a battle between two animals you wouldn't see together, a jaguar and a horse, as the Jags head to Denver to take on the Broncos. Joe Flacco, Super Bowl winning quarterback, Super Bowl MVP. He loves playing in Denver. You know, he threw that legendary long touchdown against the Broncos in the postseason. Gardner Minshew. The new era of the NFL has arisen. He will put these teams on notice, and he's going to do it again this week. Minshew takes down the Broncos on the road, no doubt in my mind. Minshew is the man. It's just look at him. And I'm not. Look, I was first guessing this, not second guessing. He looked good against Kansas City. The kid looks good, man. He does. And you don't win. You don't wind up top 10 in the Heisman voting if you can't play some football. Gardner Minshew, en route to completely taking Nick Foles' job. Gardner Minshew. Our 8:20 game, Sunday Night Football. Alan Chris will be there. And this one is going to be Dallas against the Saints from the Superdome. This is a really hard pick for me. This might be the hardest one of the week, to be completely honest with you. Right up there with Vikings-Bears. Because the Saints are at home. The Saints still have a really talented core. But the Saints are without Drew Brees. With Drew, I picked the Saints 9 times out of 10 in this matchup. Without Drew, and I love Teddy Bridgewater, but he hasn't shown me the same Teddy Bridgewater he was in Minnesota yet. this could be the game where Teddy breaks out and shows that he's still Teddy. Or Dallas, who's a hot team, could stay hot, put the NFL on notice a little bit, say, hey, no. We're not just here to try and win the division and, you know, and all get some paychecks, because everybody's getting paid big bucks in that locker room. You know, with Dax contract incoming and Amari Cooper getting a contract probably after the season, and Zeke already have signed his, and, you know, Tyron Smith, and everybody's getting paid. Dallas wins this one. I really think they do. I'd say that the extenuating factor that could be a loss for them would be obviously the Saints' pass rush, which is pretty effective, albeit, you know, Dallas has a great offensive line. That being said, it has to be Teddy. Teddy's the X factor. If Teddy is Teddy from a few years ago, the Saints could win this one. They could keep up. And they beat Seattle. But they beat Seattle on the strength of a forced fumble, a turnover, you know, on a punt return. Can they piece it together against the Cowboys? I don't think they can. If they get out ahead early, though, that crowd's going to get loud. It's going to be a lot harder for Dallas. Got to get the lead early if you're the Saints. Might want to receive in this one. Got to get the ball first. Get the ball first and score. Our Monday Night Football matchup, as I alluded to, that I've been bashing so tragically, is Bengals at Steelers. And the Bengals have been competitive pretty much for the whole season. They really have. Pittsburgh rolling with Mason Rudolph. James Conner didn't really contribute as much as I thought he would last week. Although Juju is a baller and he seems to like the primetime stage, and I don't know. I think I'm going to take the Steelers because they're at home, and Pittsburgh's got to win a game, you know, eventually, right? And Pittsburgh's not going to go 0-16 here. They almost beat Seattle. Give me Pittsburgh at home. I'm very tentative. This might be the most tentative I've ever been about a Pittsburgh pick, you know, than when they're not playing New England. Give me Pittsburgh, but it wouldn't shock me if they lost this one and dropped to 0-4. Our Thursday night matchup next week, week 5, October the 3rd, coming to you from Seattle, the Rams against the Seahawks. It's going to be a really good one. The Rams this week, as I remind you, are playing against the Buccaneers at home, and the Seahawks are playing against the Cardinals. So neither one's going to have the super tough duty. The Rams are going to have to travel up the West Coast a little bit. Excuse me, tongue twister. Gonna have to travel up the coast a little bit for this one, but they're not coming across the country. Nothing crazy. So this one should be a pretty good one. I want to take Seattle, but I have a feeling the Rams win this one. Seattle at home, we used to be invulnerable. They're not anymore. This one screams deceptive high-scoring game. I don't know. If Goff can... I don't know, man. And sometimes, you know, I wonder if you guys, you know, let me know anywhere in the comments or on social media. You know, I like to... Some of this, it's all live, obviously. It's recorded when you're hearing it, but it's mostly one-take Drake here. So when I'm haggling through these picks, I leave it in there because, you know, if you were gambling a game or if you were picking a game like this, this is probably what you'd be doing. I wonder, you know, if you like it. If you want me to edit it out, let me know. But if you like it, you know, I think it adds a little bit. Shows that it's not super, you know, this isn't a studio job. This is a one-man show. And, you know, adds a little personality, I'd say. Now back to the point here. Russell Wilson is a primetime player. He's a clutch player. He's a big-time guy. And I don't know if he lets the Rams come into his house and win. Goff seems to be the type of guy so far that when it's a big game, he's very hit or miss. We saw him throw, you know, play not too well in the Super Bowl. We've seen him have bad games. He's won in Seattle before, though. And I think that's a big difference maker. I'm going to pick the Rams. I'm not super confident. But I'm going to pick the Rams in this one. I think they're the better team at the end of the day. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of the pick'em portion. And thank you for joining us for episode 60 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. Join us again next Saturday afternoon for the next episode, episode 61. We're getting there. Look at that. We're going to be at 100 before we know it. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.